You're listening to Show Me Your Mic, a show that interviews other podcasters about their workflows, gear, and thoughts on podcasting. Your host is Chris Enns, and for episode 4, he's joined by Darren Moser of the Dr. Sci-Fi Show.
All right. Hello. Thanks for listening to Show Me Your Mic. As you heard in the intro, my guest this week is Darren Moser from... I didn't even double check. Am I pronouncing that right?
That's the first rule of podcasting.
is pronouncing your guest's name right. From the Dr. Sci-Fi Show. Welcome, Darren.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
Yeah, so it's good to have you here. The reason I'm not familiar with your show, which is another thing I think I've mentioned in episode 3.
It is fairly new.
Yeah. And I had seen you'd replied, I think, to Mike Hurley of 70 Decibels about your setup. And so I just clicked your link, saw your setup, and I thought, wow, that's an interesting kind of setup and config. And we'll get into all the details of that. And then I had invited you to come on and hadn't even realized that you just basically started the show. Not that, like I said before, this isn't about just experience high audience number of people or whatever. It doesn't really matter. I'm curious about all levels of, podcast production.
Well, that was definitely one of the reasons I wrote that kind of article about my setup. Is when I was just scouring the internet to find other people's setups, I came across a couple of articles and they really helped me out. So I thought the least I could do was offer that up for other people who might be interested in starting their own podcast.
Yeah. Oh, it's tremendously helpful. And there's so many. And what's, I think, interesting about your setup, and we'll keep teasing people and we'll talk about it eventually here, but that it is different from, at least in my experience, some of the other setups that I've come across. And it's, that gets back to, I know I talked about this in episode 1 with Dave Rupert, is just the sort of silos that develop in the internet of, you sort of gravitate towards the people that do similar things to you, and you don't, once, I think you even reference it too, like with Trello, and once you find something that works, you kind of just grab onto that and you just ignore everything else from then on out. So, but before we get into that.
If it works, go with it.
What's that, sir?
If you find something that works, you just go with
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we get into that, though, I just wanted to give you a chance just to talk a bit about the show itself. I would presume people would be able to gather that it's a bit of a science fiction show, but what's your sort of elevator pitch, as it were, for the show?
My tagline is it's a weekly podcast. Let's see. Actually, I'd have to reread it for myself. I should have this on. I should have this memorized. I do. I'm just crunching. It's a weekly podcast covering first-time sci-fi experiences, genre rants, and space exploration. And so that distills down to basically three things I wanted to communicate. One was first-time sci-fi experiences. I like talking to people, especially my wife, Maureen, and just using it as a teaching moment. I do watch a lot of science fiction and absorb a lot from the genre. And so one of the things I do enjoy is just sharing that with other people, just sharing that even if they aren't really into science fiction, but just being an entry point. I also like talking just generally about the genre, from Star Wars to Star Trek, but I also have a spot in my heart definitely for space exploration. I see it as almost science fiction that just became science fact, and it's just such an amazing time from the 60s onwards that we're living in, where with these wonderful achievements that mankind has had in the area of space exploration. So it kind of evolved from a blog that I did for a little bit over a year, and just kind of one of the podcasts I listened to is the Write for Your Life podcast. One of the things he had mentioned recently, which I kind of agree with, is sometimes blogging and podcasting can be so different, and from the time commitment it takes to just the way you organize your thoughts. And I was starting to run into the point where blogging was beginning to just take that extra bit of time that just was, I was almost kind of forcing myself to do, to put out new articles. And I thought, well, rather than fight that resistance, change that energy that's still there into something that I can retailer and use to reach other people through podcasting. So I'm kind of in the process of shifting my focus on my site more towards the podcast with a couple of articles during the week. But I think they're just two sides of another coin, and there's so many ways with the internet to reach people, from podcasting to blogs to YouTube shows, and there's just all flavors of the same great thing.
Yeah, and that's what's exciting. I mean, that's the fun of doing stuff like this, and like you said, even dipping your toes a bit in the blogging side to the podcasting side. And I was just really, when you said Write for Your Life, I was looking through your list of podcasts that you'd sent, and that's another one that's on the 70 Decibel Network, which, man, Mike, I know Mike's not necessarily involved in all the shows that he does, but man, he's got a lot of good shows.
I'm a fairly large fan of the network. I do enjoy many of their shows and am able to listen to most of them, as many people who overload their podcatcher know. Sometimes you have to cull it every once in a while to get through the week. But many of their shows I enjoy, even though I'm not a tech writer. I don't produce applications or write about, you know, getting things done. But I enjoy being a part of that audience though, and listening to those things. And I think they speak to me as they speak to many people in their daily lives. And what's great is they're not preaching just to people within their industry, but they're able to speak to a wide audience, which I think is one of the reasons it's so popular. So I'm definitely hooked on the 70 Decibels Network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's if anybody's listening and just jumping in this episode, which is episode 4 of Show Me Your Mic, episode 3, one back, is actually with Mike Hurley. No, sorry, episode 2.
Two episodes back.
Yeah, episode 2 is with Mike Hurley talking all about his stuff. And I know he's got some exciting stuff coming up here again in the near future. So I'll probably have him on again sometime to chat. But so getting back to your podcast, I'm just going to play a little clip here. Just from your most recent episode, is the one with Dave Kaler.
With Dave Kaler, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, just so you'll hear.
Right before that, they're playing nice music and Lando saying nice things. And then Vader stands up and Chewie lets out this horrible guttural roar like a lion. I love it. It's so aggressive. Han whips out his blaster and, you know, gets off a few shots before Vader uses the Force to pull it right to himself. And then the stormtroopers come in on the flanks, and the group walks into the room. That's my favorite moment in Empire. I love it. I love it every time I see it.
Look, Dave, I can see you're really upset about this. I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
I know, Carbon. I get a little excited.
So that's a little taste. I sort of picked a random spot. I was hoping I picked one with...
No, that's a great spot.
Carbon, just for people who don't know, I guess, what's the deal with Carbon that Dave is talking to, obviously, there, and what's going on?
So during the formation of my show, it kind of went through a lot of small changes at the very last minute before I started recording. And what I've decided to do is, a lot of times when I'm not interviewing someone, I'm discussing science fiction with my wife Maureen and getting her input, and she's, you know, a lover of sci-fi, but it's definitely not her first genre of choice, but she is a great kind of blank slate in a lot of ways. Well, she's giving me a little bit of a look.
Blank slate is not a great way to describe.
Except for Star Wars. Star Wars is her pride and joy. So she is a huge Star Wars fan. But I decided to build the show around us discussing science fiction, but then for interviews, to keep it kind of a two-person perspective, I created a character called Carbon, who is an AI, which is I detail in my setup process all the steps that go into bringing a voice to Carbon. But I liked kind of the pseudo character idea of this artificial intelligence that, you know, is a blank slate. They need really a blank slate, and they're just being programmed. And I mean, yes, it's kind of a bit of a gag, but also I think a fun way of broaching questions to it, you know, people I'm interviewing, and just kind of a fun way. I based him a lot off of, or her off of the disembodied character off of Riff Tracks, if you've ever listened to a riff track, where it's basically kind of a, let's see, sidebar into Riff Tracks. Riff Tracks are, have you seen Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Yes, yeah.
So what those three very talented people did after that show, they did a couple other things, but then they landed on this company they made called Riff Tracks. And what it is they record new commentary tracks for existing movies. So besides the B sci-fi movies of the day, you can get riff tracks for the Twilight series. You can get riff tracks for Star Wars or Superman or Spider-Man, Tron, Jurassic Park. And they basically record an audio file that you can sync up with your own DVD. So you just purchase a $3-4 audio file and you adjust the volumes and listen to them. So they have a friend of theirs who does a roboticized voice, and his name's Disembodio. And basically he'll speak a line of dialogue at the same time as someone in the movie every once in a while to let you know you're still in sync. So basically in that regard, Carbon was just a co-host, but a co-host that doesn't do a ton of the talking, mostly asking questions. And I know Dave Kayla is a large 2001 A Space Odyssey fan. So that line I had Carbon recite to him, I'm like, well, his name's Dave. I got to go for it. It's too too precious of an encounter. So that's sort of the long version of where Carbon came from.
Yeah. So let's maybe jump into a bit of your setup and we'll sort of go around a bit. So on your site, on drsci-fi.com/the-setup, and the links that will be in the show notes here for folks at sskTN.com, and look for Show Me Your Mic, and this will be episode 4. But one of the things you did detail is how you manage or produce, I guess, the show with in regards to Carbon, the AI co-host. And I wasn't sure from reading it, and like I listened to a few of the episodes and stuff, is it something where you're able to... Well, for folks who are just listening, I guess you use Simple Note into VoiceOver, into GarageBand, into Final Cut Pro, Dropbox, DJ Soundbox Pro, some sort of combination of those.
Correct.
Is it something that you're doing live with the show, or is it pre-done and you just sort of are queuing it up?
It's all pre-done because I use Siri, which is the voice. Siri has a VoiceOver feature within an iPhone or an iPad, which is great, but unfortunately, I didn't want to do a lot of typing. It would break up the pace of the show because as I would think of something clever to say, by the time I would type it and get her to say it back correctly, it just wouldn't come across. So that's, again, why I use Carbon to ask questions, because questions can be pre-formatted. For the few questions that I come up on the fly, I can just ask them. So what I do is I script out what I want her to say, her individual lines, but I also have a series of responses like yes, no, I don't know, so that if the guest does ask a question, I can at least have her respond in that regard. But you can't ask her a direct question because I don't have specific answers. So typing it on a Simple Note lets me type it quickly on my computer, and that syncs with the iPad app. And so that's, again, so I just don't have to type it on my iPad. Right. Then using the voice over tool, which basically lets Siri read a paragraph from your iPad. So she's reading the paragraph of lines. That is going line in into GarageBand with a couple of filters just to make it sound a little different. I mean, I'm not trying to hide that it's Siri, but I like the fact that this is a character and a voice that I have as opposed to an Apple thing.
Right.
Plus, I don't want them to sue me, not that they would. So once it's in GarageBand, I have a single audio clip that has about two dozen phrases. And I could chop it up in GarageBand, but I've been an editor for many, many years, so Final Cut Pro is just so much quicker for me. So I dump it out as an MP3 into Final Cut, chop it up into the individual segments, and then drop those in a Dropbox folder. The last application I use in this process is called Soundbox, and it's or DJ Soundbox Pro, and it's a great basically like a soundboard app. And so you could it comes preloaded with some special effects like machine gun fire or jet flying by, but you can preload it. And so I have different screens with all of her phrases. And that just works well. So when I'm interviewing someone live, if I want her to say no, I can just boom, hit the button and she says no. Or I can hit the button and she can ask the question or say the tagline. She also opens every episode with, so I pre-record that where she says the episode number or loading file number 001002. So it's definitely not a live process, but the goal is to make it at least have the appearance, Wizard of Oz pulling the curtain back here, the appearance of being live.
Right. So yeah, we should have, maybe I should have, should go back and say a spoiler alert so that similar to Santa Claus, we don't want anybody who doesn't think, who thinks that Carbon is actually your co-host to not have the effect ruined, right? That's the...
Well, this is a podcast about podcasting.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much wanting the curtain drawn back a little bit if you're listening to this.
Open the kimono, as Merlin Mann says.
And if it was really a secret, I wouldn't have posted it on my website.
Yeah. And that's interesting because I was, in reading it, I didn't connect all the dots there, but that makes a lot more sense that you're using DJ Soundbox Pro ultimately as you're recording the show as sort of the live, similar to how radio DJs and everybody else sort of does that with all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a neat process. And it definitely adds something different just to your typical podcast, and especially in keeping with the theme. Obviously.
Yes. No, it does add a little bit of flavor, but I also, It just takes so much time and so many steps that's one of the reasons I decided to just regale it to the interview episodes only, because then that's probably going to make up about half of the episodes as far as they're coming out as of now. So just less prep time that I have to spend, as it does take a couple of hours to just get it all put together and think out. You're basically scripting a character as you would for a story. But it's fun. And like you said, I think it adds a little something fun. Dave was a great first subject, and he was perfect. He responded to Carbon as if she was asking him questions and wasn't like, what is this? What's going on? He was a very good sport. So
yeah, and that's the key, obviously, and something another reoccurring theme of a lot of these interviews is picking a good interviewee that plays along, so to speak, in your case, or you know, for other folks, obviously, just is able to communicate back and forth with you. And so, because it could fall apart very quickly if somebody's just kind of weirded out by, but presumably they wouldn't come on a sci-fi podcast if they weren't at least a little intrigued. So
and that's one of the ways I've looked for people to interview, as you can kind of see in my setup page at the top. I have a screenshot from my Trello program. And I can talk about Trello if you want. It's a project management tool that operates off of like cards is what they call it. And so you have several columns, so vertical columns that you can name whatever you want. And it's built around, basically it works just the same way that my mind works. And I've been looking for something like this. And so I was so happy when I found it because it's great. And they actually just updated their iPad, their iPhone app to also be iPad compatible. So,
oh, nice. Yep.
Even better. So basically you create these columns and it's perfect for tasks where you, let's say you're at work and you know, every Monday I need to export this file and then upload it here and then give it a name and then save it here. Those are four steps. And so you could make a column for every step and you could make a card that goes in those columns and then just drag it across as it's being completed. But then at the beginning of the next week, you just move everything back and start again. And I see many people who do something similar with either a whiteboard or something they can dry erase and just the same checklist you have every single week, you know, rather than redoing it. That's the way at least I use it in operating. So I have a column for all my topic ideas and a long pool of people to talk to or topics to discuss. Then I have a scripting pool, and it's a little smaller. That's something that's kind of risen to the top, something I want to cover sooner, or at least talk to setting up an interview. Then once that interview is scheduled, I move it to the next column over where, okay, now this is actually happening. It has a date. It has a time where it's probably going to air. And then at the end, it goes into my publishing column, the last column, where that means, okay, it's been recorded, it's ready to go, and it's been given an episode number. One of the kind of differences, at least in my show from some others, is I don't necessarily record them in order that they're going to air. I know a lot of people record week of, and then a day later or 2 days later, they release on the same time every week. But I'm still in the process a bit of building a buffer of about 4 episodes that I'd like to have just for in case, you know, life strikes or something happens, so that I can continuously put something out every week, but not stress myself out too much about that.
Yeah, and that's two things there, I guess. The Trello stuff I know is really neat. We've at SSKTN, I've used it with a couple of shows where guests or co-hosts were more technically inclined, I guess, and the way that you use it, I think, is really interesting and not something that I thought of, because we kind of kept it sort of siloed. You know, each thing just kind of was there, and then we delete them. But moving things, cards across, I guess, is the vernacular that they use on there. But moving the cards across as they sort of proceed through your workflow is kind of a neat idea. And the screenshot you have there perfectly shows just how that would work if you're not sort of understanding what we're talking about. But because then, if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've used Trello, but as you would, like, say a card for which one? Your Doctor Who episode, let's say, for example. You can attach comments and things to that card, right? And then
you can
those
add
would stay
pictures,
with it as you...
Add comments. A lot of times, you're basically, it's like you're building a case file. And so I'll put information of, oh, I tweeted back to so-and-so and they're really interested, or, oh, this date might work for them, or they responded back on such and such a date. And so it just keeps it all in one place. You can also tag. They have about 5 or 6 different colors. You can tag them. And so I have a tag for a show that's going to be just Maureen and I talking. I have a tag for a guest show. And then I have a tag just for a person I want to talk to, a host, but I don't exactly know what we're going to talk about yet. And so I use those to help things kind of pop out at me as I'm scanning and looking for something. So yeah, there's so many things you can put into it. And it's also listed as a project management tool. So it does have collaborative features. You can have other users that can use it. It sounds like you've used it in that regard, similar to a Basecamp type thing, a little simpler, but allowing other people, if you're in different places, to see the same information. So it's very robust, as from what I found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just the way you're talking about it actually makes me think I should revisit it, just even if nothing else for this show, because this show is the Show Me Your Mic show. It just follows a little different procedure than some of my other shows that I do. And so it needs to be a little more planned out and things like that. And so might have to revisit it. But my day job is a web designer, and so I use Basecamp there already. And so kind of it's just tough having all these different tools and deciding on one and keeping everything in one shoebox, so to speak. But can handle a little bit of separation, I think, every so often. So anyways,
before I came across Trello, I basically had a really large iCloud note document, and basically everything was just dumped in there, which was a single spot to keep it, but you can't bold things, you can't indent things. It was hard to make things pop out as I wanted. And like I said, when I found Trello, that someone else had been using it, and I was like, okay, moving everything over, and I'm going to use this. But with the iPad app and the iPhone app, it's always accessible. I can jot down and make a new card when I get an idea or talk to someone. Even if nothing comes of it, it's there and recorded.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving on to, I guess, a bit of hardware discussion. The microphone of choice for you has been using the Blue Snowball microphone. And I don't know how much time I want to spend talking mics. It was when I originally started the podcast, I thought, oh, we'll spend half an hour talking about microphones and stuff. But
there's only so many that really are prevalent, it seems.
Yeah, and there's some the expensive end, and there's some the low end, and like I've discussed in some of the previous episodes, it kind of feels like everyone's just going to grow. You're going to find, like, maybe I'm minimizing the discussion too much for someone who's new to it. I don't want to discredit this discussion completely, I guess, but thoughts, I guess, in choosing the Blue Snowball microphone, what were sort of some of your thoughts?
It was a microphone I actually put on my Christmas list for this last year, and even though I think my favorite microphone, if I had to choose one, would be the Blue Yeti. It just looks, it's a bit about probably twice the cost of the Blue Snowball. But you know, when I was making my list, I thought, well, okay, if no one gets this for me though, I could go buy this for myself if I kind of pinch pennies for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really want to put a huge top of the line mic and say, this is what I'd like for Christmas, but I won't buy it for myself. That kind of led me, it was more of a cost issue for the Blue Snowball. But as I kind of detailed in my setup document, you know, if you're starting a podcast though, while good mics are, I mean, it is one of the key pieces, if not the key piece of equipment you'll own. But don't let not having a Blue or a popular name microphone stop you. Just use your iPhone and talk into the headset. Use anything that's built in. Just get started, because if that becomes, you know, a roadblock, you know, so many times I know it slowed me down when I was starting to just try to get my ideas together as well. I can't really start until I have at least a nice microphone, but that's not exactly true. It wouldn't have sounded as good, but it definitely shouldn't be a barrier to stop you if you are interested in doing a podcast. Just start recording, and in those first few episodes, even if you don't air them, you'll work out your flow or a bit of, you know, what you want your show to sound like, and then, you know, your first aired episode, maybe by then you've scratched a couple of dollars together, or US dollars or Canadian. but I do enjoy the Blue microphone. It is a really good for a single person. It does have a switch on the back that lets it change the what's the word? It basically changed the way the capsules inside of it react. And so when I'm recording with Marine, I switch it to the third setting, which is more of a sphere and pulls from the two of us. Because as we're right now, we're sharing the same mic when it's the two of us. But on the horizon, though, I would probably like to upgrade to a Yeti or the new Nessie microphone that I guess Blue Microphones is debuting, which is even more built for podcasts. So a good mic, I do enjoy it. It's a good size. It goes right into GarageBand with USB, and it just has a great sound. The first time I ever was on a podcast, I was using the built-in on top of my iMac microphone, and listening to it later, I thought, wow, those guys put up with a lot, because it did not sound that great at all, but they never made me feel bad for the status of my microphone.
Yeah. And I think too, for folks, that's great advice. Cause when you're starting out, it's tempting to just be like, use the microphone argument or the mixer, or the hardware, or the software argument as a hindrance to just getting the stuff out there. And I know on some of the other shows I produce and help produce, we've interviewed, you know, famous, whatever you want to call them, internet famous people, and all they talk into is, you know, like you said, their iPhone headset plugged into their MacBook, and their audio doesn't sound amazing, but the content is what people are really after at the end of the day. As long as it's not screaming in their ears or hissy and buzzy and all that kind of stuff, there'll be audio nerds who'll poo-poo you or look down their nose at you maybe a bit, but at the end of the day, it's just getting the podcast out that's really the important thing. So
it is
good advice. Well, and even for somebody, I mean, like what I'm talking into a Heil PR40, which is on the expensive end of microphones, because I was dumb and didn't heed my own advice of just getting podcasting. I use that as an excuse. And so for somebody listening, I mean, there may be a bit of an audio difference for some people who are really picky and listening to my mic versus your mic, but you're also coming in over Skype and there's issues there. And so whether there's actually a $300 or whatever the difference in price is, difference, I don't know. I'd be hard pressed to, if my wife was here anyway, she'd say, why did you buy that when you could have spent that much less? But
there are so many different factors, like you said, the Skype, you know, being a part of the connection. Some people even call or use like TalkShoe or something else. We're using a phone jack line, and that would probably be the on the lowest end of quality. So there are many things. Just as long as you're clear and you can be understood, which it seems we both are, because you're still listening. You haven't hit pause yet. So then just go with what you have.
Yeah. And so speaking of Skype, one of the interesting things that I found, and again, it's way more common than I thought it was, but using something like Google Hangout, I've only come across, sorry, folks, using Skype, but then complaining the whole time while they're using Skype, as I have many times. So you're using Google Hangouts as the audio...
The vehicle of my recording choice.
Yeah, so talk a bit about that. What was the reasoning? Because I've thought about it and just haven't ever really... Again, you're using something and it's a lot more work to switch out of what you're using. So how's that been?
Well, a lot, large fan of podcasts and listen to many other people. Again, the call dropped. Oh, we got to get so-and-so back on. Let me hit the button and you hear the telltale Skype sound in the background. Mm-hmm. And Skype was definitely my number two choice. If this didn't work, I was said, well, I know people use Skype and I can figure out a way to make it work. One of the things was of using Google Hangout versus Skype was also just a cost thing. While Skype is free, from my research, most people who were really serious about using Skype had a secondary program to record from Skype. Do you use such a program or is there something built in I'm just not aware of?
No, yeah. Well, I use a different, you're actually coming into me on a Mac Mini that's a separate computer. So yeah, there definitely is. In my case, it was an extra machine that I had lying around that used to be like our TV media server thing. And I repurposed it to be this. It's basically just all it does is serve up Skype and then also sometimes movies, but that's for another podcast. But
So that would be another thing is, you know, not having a secondary computer sitting around to just handle and make sure Skype buffers correctly and comes across clearly. So that led me to look for other options. And the real turning point was there was an article I list in my setup called The Slow-Mo Show and how they set up. And they use Google Hangout as well. And it was a godsend finding this article because they were very specific about, okay, we use this program and we use this program and they're both free and they route the sound this way. And it took a bit of trial and error, but it lets me line in all the different sources I have that go into GarageBand to record. So part of it was maybe a stability issue. Not that Skype isn't a great program, but again, you do hear a lot of people, you know, complain a bit about it just sometimes. Our connection's going great and I can hear you fine right now. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. But with Google Hangout, I've used that for other purposes in the past and it's, you know, always been very good on quality. Also lets you adjust the bandwidth a bit. You can drop the video portion if you want, so it's using less. The other thing is, like right now we're conversing on Skype, but we aren't using the video feature, probably for bandwidth and just making sure it doesn't impact it. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I interviewed Dave, we were both seeing each other, through the Hangout. And again, that's not, it's not a feature that Skype can't do, but in Google Hangout, that was very beneficial to see him as we're talking, see his beautiful Rode podcaster mic. And, but as we were talking, you know, visually, when you can see the other person, it does help in the pacing a bit because you don't step on each other's words as often. You can see when you're about to take a breath or bring up a point. And so I think it helped our conversation go a little bit smoother. But overall, once you get the routing issues aside of getting the audio into the Hangout and out to wherever you're recording, I'm recording into GarageBand. It comes free. On every Mac in the world. I think if I had to pick one thing, it was probably just cost. It was just didn't have a lot of money to put into this. So have the thought of buying another program because it seemed like the ones that did what I wanted them to do were at least maybe $20, $30, $40 to just either route the audio like I wanted or just to record it itself. And again, that I haven't done a ton of research. So if you do want to use Skype, you know, just dig a little deeper and you might find something for cheaper. But that's at least what I came across. So that was probably the number one factor of why I went with Google Hangout. And as of now, it's working really well.
Yeah. And the one thing I was going to ask you about is in reading through your article, and like I said, for folks, your article that I'll link to, and then the one that you linked to as well, that from the Slow Mo Show, which it's just fun. This is what's fun about this podcast is, like, I mean, I try and I think of myself as being a fairly avid podcast listener, but there's just so many out there that I know I'm going to discover. We're going to discover so many different shows as I do these interviews, but because I had never heard of that one either, but it looks like a very popular, fun show. But what I was going to ask you is, so when you're recording in GarageBand, are you ending up with everybody on individual tracks, or is it one stereo track that you end up with and then you're adding, like, say, Carbon or whatever on top of that in music?
No, they do come in as individual tracks, which I think is really important because it lets you adjust things later. And so there's two other programs I use besides Google Hangout that are mostly for routing. One is called Line-In, and that I'm still a little bit fuzzy exactly on how these two programs both work, but it's still a little bit of experimenting. So basically what Line-In allows, Google Hangout won't output to a two channel, or no, sorry, I think it's either Google Hangout won't output the proper way or GarageBand won't accept it the proper way. So you need a program like Line-In, and basically what Line-In does is it takes a two channel and makes it into a 64 channel. That doesn't mean 64 different inputs. It's kind of misleading in that regard, but it basically makes it a more complex signal that GarageBand likes and Google Hangout likes. Then I use a program called Soundflower, which I think I accidentally typed Sunflower the first time I wrote this article, but then caught myself. Soundflower, and what that does, it also does a bit of routing to make sure you can hear what's going on. But the biggest thing that adjusts it is a program that's built right into every Mac. It's called the Audio MIDI Setup. And if you just type into the search bar, it's buried in the utilities folder, in your applications folder. But basically, it shows all of your inputs. And what you can do is you can create a virtual input. And so this virtual input, you basically, it's like a group. And so I made one called GarageBand 3X Input. And I have three inputs going in. One is pulling what I'm plugged into my Line-In jack, and that's Carbon, because Carbon's coming off of an iPad mini from the soundboard. And so that's coming in to that one input. Then I have my blue snowball, which is USB. And then I have Soundflower, which is like a virtual input. And that's what's coming from GarageBand. Or sorry, what's coming from the Hangout.
Hangout, yeah.
So in GarageBand, I have about five or six different tracks. One is my intro track that I've preloaded with Carbon's voice introducing the show. Then I have a track for the Hangout, which uses, so what you do is you select the track, and in the lower right corner of GarageBand, the first step is you go to the settings of GarageBand and you tell it what input you want. Now, normally you would choose a single input like your microphone, but you can choose the virtual input, and it's basically like giving you three. So at the beginning, you go and you set, sometimes, like if you use GarageBand and you plug in a new mic, it says, hey, you plugged in a new mic. Would you like to use this as your input? Say no and make sure you use your virtual input. So you set that as your virtual input. Then from each track, you can say, okay, track one, I'm going to use channels one and two, and that's what's going to be the Line-In input. And then you go track two, I'm going to use channels three and four, and that's what's coming through for the blue snowball. And then track three, I'm going to use channels five and six, and that's coming out of Soundflower and the Hangout. So at the end of the day, you're doing multi-track recording, but they all are coming across separately, and you can adjust the volume and you can adjust the input level. But that was really important for me to be able to do that in GarageBand, just for the post effect of when you're both recorded on the same time, it does kind of bind you. And once it's laid down, it's very difficult to separate. Mm-hmm. So they come in through three separate tracks, and then it's all recorded together. I go back through and make some adjustments, but sometimes adjusting, you know, my waveform a bit to drop my lows if there is a bit of background. I've been getting better at getting closer to the microphone. Hopefully, especially in your first few episodes, each one should progress a little bit better than the last. but they all come through, and then stack it together. Use the built-in features of GarageBand to name it and give it some metadata for podcasting. And then I'm going to actually update some of my setup page. I've started using another program called the Levelator, which I know some people use, some people don't. It basically is a program that will take an audio file and scan it, and it levels it. So if I was talking much lower than you on this recording, it would increase me a bit and decrease you a bit and line us up so we sound much more on the same level. And especially in the episode where I was talking with Dave and he was coming through very clearly with his Rode Podcaster, and I was doing so much on my computer screen that I was probably twice the distance from my mic as I should have been. So I wasn't coming through as rich as I should have. Lesson learned. So I ran, after exporting the file, ran it through the Levelator. I had to do a couple of adjustments because Levelator only accepts AAF files or WAV files, and GarageBand only outputs as an MP3 or an MP4 or an MP3 or an M4V.
Yeah. M4A, yeah. I think, or something. Yeah.
M4A, yeah. So I was putting into iTunes, converting it to an AIF, putting it through the Levelator, putting it back into iTunes, and converting it back to an MP3. I need to work on that because it's making my file size really large. So that is in process, and I'll be updating that on my page once I figure that out. But so that's roughly the programs I use and the way I record into GarageBand. But an overall kind of direction was just, again, cost. You know, having a Macintosh is great just because it comes with so many tools that right off the bat, GarageBand is such a powerful thing. A little intimidating, but not too bad. It's a little more intense than using iTunes, but it does do a lot. And some of these extra free programs, such as Line-In and SoundFlower, they do the job, and they help route the audio. And my show is a little bit more complex in the fact that I'm using the Line-In jack and I'm communicating over the Hangout. If it was just you talking, then it's just a single microphone, and that's obviously easier. But if you want to do a more complicated setup, then you're digging your own hole. But it is possible to get out. that's roughly the programs I use on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and that's a neat, again, interesting setup. And that's the one thing I was going to say is in line with my question. I think that if I had one thought for your setup page is a screenshot of what you do actually in GarageBand, because that's the one part I was where it. And I know I've done you did a great job of detailing everything, so I'm not trying to knock anything as far as
the setup is. But, it is a work in progress page.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I posted a similar page to that on Twitter when I was teasing the coming of my new show, but I've yet to include that in the setup page, and I'll definitely do that. I want to drill down a lot more into the routing. That's one of the reasons I link back to the one just for thanks, but also for the Slow-Lomo show article that really helped me. They say it a lot clearer than I, as far as what Line-In and SoundFlower are doing. So rather than just copy exactly what they say, I'm trying to put it in my own words and exactly how my setup is. I definitely want to add a couple more screenshots, especially of GarageBand, and would ultimately like it to be as step-by-step as their article is, where if you wanted to copy my setup, it was possible. And obviously it's a starting point for everyone. Something you could, if you're getting into it, you'll most likely be different, or you won't use a blue microphone, or you'll use something else. But it lays a lot of groundwork, which I think should, hopefully the goal is that it helps people get started if they want.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I love about it is like you said, the free aspect of all the stuff is
lots of free.
Yeah. And that's, I know before I took my stupid plunge with all the the money I dumped into a bunch of stuff, that's exactly the way I was working. And you can accomplish a whole heck of a lot with free. And
if you don't have a Apple, it is a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. Maybe some would say a lot harder, but it just doesn't. There may be similar things built in on the Windows platform. I unfortunately do not know what those are, but I'm sure there are things to record onto. But if you have a Mac, you're halfway there for sure.
Yeah, and there are things like just so it, I guess to prevent some emails from folks like. on the Skype side of things, there are things like Ecamm has a Mac call recorder that you can use to, if you're wanting to record your conversations from Skype, but other solutions. Audio Hijack Pro from Rogue Amoeba is another one that's around $30-some, I think.
That one was very tempting. They're also they're the same makers of Linen. They make that program. It's one of their free ones, but they do make Audio Hijack, which is also on my Christmas list probably.
There you go. So there are options there, but I think what you're doing actually does sort of, I think, in as much as, for me, what did me in, I guess, is, and it's just, I think my brain is just slow sometimes, is the virtualness of everything kind of did me in, because I was just kind of like, I don't know, I need to somehow see stuff where it's like plug a cable in here so I can plug it in there, and that's just because I'm slow sometimes. And so, but yeah, certainly Linen and Soundflower are crazy powerful and awesome for what you can do and sort of messing around with the audio routing in your Mac. And before I came across that, I was lost for what to do. So the other one, I'm just looking at Rogue Amoeba's page, just for anybody who's curious, is an app they make called Nicecast, which is if you're wanting to stream out while you're recording, which again adds a whole nother level of complexity to what's going on. But that's another great app that I've used for playing around with live streaming and stuff of a podcast. It's a bit more expensive too. I think it's about $60 for that one. It's kind of interesting the way they price stuff, because you think Audio Hijack Pro, which has all this stuff in it, is about $30. Nicecast, which basically just takes your audio and streams it out, is $60. Anyways, that's another rant for another show.
Yeah, there are no current plans to take the Dr. Sci-Fi Show live as it is. It's just a lot of pre-production, and I do enjoy the options that I have, you know, that you have when you can record a couple of shows in a week if you're having an open week, and then string them out over the rest of the month just to make sure it's coming along consistently. But maybe one day, but especially with Carbon, it's just very difficult to do live type setups where you never know what someone's going to say.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, to your credit, I think that's a great thing to do, because it part of the, well, just the Carbon thing, but also just the uniqueness of the podcast makes it, I think people will tune in whether it's live or not. And you can also, I think what you're doing with Google Hangouts does sort of give you the capability down the road to incorporate their view. I forget what they call it. Like you can watch it live on YouTube or whatever if you really wanted to.
They do have I think it's an on air.
Right.
It's Google Hangout. On air.
Yeah.
Where basically you're streaming, not that everyone can interact with you, but they can see it as you're broadcasting. And yeah, that would be probably the next step I would use, because again, it's built into practically my workflow. It's just a checkbox when you create the Hangout where we could stream that. And that might be down the line if I have enough of a following or enough of a subscriber base where I feel people would actually tune in and watch. But it's, again, there are some shows I know that do live broadcast, but I'm often at work if it's not in the evening or they're in a different time zone. And the internet's great because everything you can watch whenever.
Yeah.
That's the whole model. And so maybe sometime in the future, but not quite yet.
Yeah. And you use, for publishing, you use Squarespace, which I don't know if it's that uncommon anymore. It's definitely a big push. I know Squarespace themselves are having into the whole podcasting realm as far as sponsoring and a lot of podcasts. And I know you're on Squarespace 6, it looks like, the newest.
Yes.
Newest one.
Yeah. I love Squarespace. It is a great platform. I was convinced to get it from listening to about a half dozen 70 decibel shows. They've been, I think Squarespace has been their primary sponsor for several months, and which is good because it's working. It got me to listen and check out their site, and it's very robust. It lets you create a lot of things, but again, it was a cost issue with a little bit just for a Squarespace site. It hosts all of my audio files and generates my RSS feed. And while I would love something like Libsyn, which is a great service that'll store and give you really good stats and things on all of your downloads and your subscriptions, it has a monthly cost that just I can't build into my budget right now. So a great thing with Squarespace is they'll host everything and generate all those pieces you need. It's very, very well built. You basically have a blog, and you create it with a checkbox that this is a podcast, and it gives you an extra tab where as you add an audio file, you can put in information that will show up in the description and who's hosting it and how long it is and all those pieces. It even pulls some of the pictures I put in on each one. And then once you publish it, it'll aggregate out to your RSS feed or iTunes or wherever you have it going. So what I use for stats as far as downloads and subscriptions, I ended up going with FeedBurner. While I know which was originally a standalone service, but now has been purchased by Google. I mean, I think they purchased it a while ago, but it wasn't my first choice. I do see a lot of people talking about it in a concerned manner, just because Google has the tendency sometimes of just dropping things that they acquire. But at the end of the day, it was a free service that did the exact job I needed to do, which was at least tell me how many people are subscribing and roughly what they're listening to, which at the end of the day, that'll help if I do eventually try to pursue something like a sponsor or things down the line, is having those numbers. So I wouldn't say I would 100% recommend it. It just for that glint in the back of your head. But for now, there's nothing to say that they won't continue it as a great service for years to come. And it definitely can't be pulling too much of their focus and effort and energy. So hopefully they'll just keep it on the line going forward. And I know a lot of people use it for statistics. It does give pretty good statistics as far as people who are subscribing and click-throughs and downloads and things like that. And while I only have two real episodes out at the time of this recording, it will hopefully balloon and show more. But it will tell you city or at least the countries that they're subscribing from. And I do see a couple of UKs pop up from once in a while and think, Mike Hurley, is he subscribing? I don't know. But we'll see. I even if not, it's when making the decision to do the Dr. Sci-Fi show, I when I was turning the idea over in my head a lot, you really just need to do it for yourself first. You need to do it because it's something you think you'll enjoy. You'll talk about something you enjoy. Don't talk about something you don't enjoy. It won't be any fun.
Yeah, you'll.
But you know,
get too far.
Subscribers are great and it's fun, but at the end, you know, just don't get hung up on the comments. Don't get hung up on how many people are listening, because the people who find it, enjoy it, they enjoyed it. And the people who haven't found it yet, you know, there's another day. So that's getting really meta, but
no, that's what this show's about.
But yeah, that's what it's all about. And if you're enjoying it and you have a subscriber of your mom and dad, you know, and your spouse, that's, you're a success.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And that's often I think sort of temper folks who are getting into podcasting with the idea that, I mean, definitely do it for sure. Don't hold back, because it's fun. It's easy to try. Like we've talked about on this episode, there's tons of free stuff you can use, provided obviously you need some sort of computer, but free services, free software that you can use. But don't expect to be able to quit your job tomorrow and do the whatever silo you happen to be following, you know, the Dan Benjamins of 5x5s, the Leo Laportes of Twit, etc. There's just like anything else, there's a bunch of people, a few people at the very top making good money at it, and there's a whole bunch of people making no money, or like me, losing money because they keep buying expensive gear that they shouldn't buy. And away you go. So in wrapping up, I guess, just wanted to touch on, you sent me the most exhaustive list yet of shows you listened to, which is good. Like we were joking before we talked, you had awesome show notes prepared in advance for me, which is awesome. But maybe just pick out a few of, I'll put them all the ones you sent, I'll put in the show notes for sure. But just for in the audio part here anyways, what are some of your, like your sort of top five, I guess, or whatever amount you want to sort of pick, but
Well, I kind of broke them into categories because for some reason that's the way my brain was working that day. But there's a couple good. I listened to that are about podcasts. One is this show, Show Me Your Mic.
Yeah, I was pleased to see that's a good vanity plug anyways.
Anyway, it was at the top of the list. How did that happen?
Yeah.
And I listened to probably a dozen shows from the 70 Decibels Network. A couple, I have listened to a few writing shows. A couple of sci-fi shows and a couple of gaming shows. As far as 70 Decibels, I really enjoy Command Space. I was a fan of the Bro Show before it reworked itself into Command Space, which is another great topic. Just as shows evolve and change, and the 512 podcast. I listened to religiously the Sci-Fi Cast, which originally was a standalone show. By Ged Mayhew and Dave Kahlo. And they did about 50 episodes, and I just discovered it as they were ending. It was very sad because they had a great ending where they were having trivia, and it sounded like the funnest thing in the world. And so when Mike Hurley, I guess, talked to them and said, I want the show on the network, and let's give it a try. And so they brought it over to 70 Decibels and had new episodes. And I was like, I am listening to the show every week. This is the best thing. And a guy actually was able to be in their seventh episode as a guest host. And I marked that as the day that I decided to start a podcast and started researching because it was so much fun. And they were just such good people to me. So I definitely listen. Unfortunately, it is not on the air anymore. I think podcasting takes a lot of time, if you didn't know. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of time, and I think there were just a lot of irons in the fire at the time for them. But go back and listen to their archives. It's a great show and a great just running commentary show. Another show I really enjoy is Star Talk Radio by Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he is how to describe Neil. He's a very fun, just sci-fi professor, like your favorite sci-fi, your favorite science professor in high school. And he's just akin to Bill Nye, a great guy. He works at the Hayden Planetarium, and he just has a way of a very good on-mic presence and just breaks things down from complicated science facts. And you can tell he's just having fun. And when you listen to people who are having fun, it just the hours tick away as you're listening. I guess my newest one that I just started, so we'll throw a little endorsement here, is Game Punchers. Interesting title, but it's a couple of people I came across on Twitter and app.net, and they just discuss games. And while I, you know, again, I don't design games, but I do play games and enjoy that, and enjoy things like Will Wheaton's Tabletop, but I enjoy their commentary on the news of what's going on. But I do like how they have a running music through their entire podcast. They use chip tunes, which are kind of that 8-bit sounding, video game era sounds, but it's very low and it's very subtle and it works. If I could find something similar that would work with sci-fi and not be chiptunes, I would probably just try it on an episode or two, because it's nice because it just fills some of that air and just has kind of a bit of a background. So not for every podcast, but it works in theirs. So I would say those are some of the highlights. Again, every once in a while, unfortunately, I might have to cull a couple from my podcatcher, which I use Instacast 3 on my iPhone. I don't really use iTunes or things on my iPad. I like it being on my iPhone because it's always on my hip and I can plug in my earphones and, listen to it, get in the car, keep listening, get out of the car, keep listening, and not have interruptions, because when you listen to this many podcasts, you need to listen a lot to try to work your way through them.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just curious when I saw Instacast 3, I I hadn't. I have Instacast 2 on my iPhone that I still use, and that's what I use primarily for my podcast listening. But did you had you used 2 and upgraded to 3, or just started with 3?
I started with 2 and really enjoyed 2. Didn't really have any issues with it. But when I got when I acquired a Mac Mini, or not a Mac Mini, an iPad Mini, I wanted to try experimenting with syncing, and Instacast 3 has the syncing option, where they sync the things you subscribe to and your playback positions, I believe. So I was planning at the time to try to integrate my my Mini into my car stereo, so it was kind of a permanent home for podcasts. Again, I kind of went away from that route, because then you're listening on your phone, then you're listening on another device, then you're back, and it does work fairly well. But I do enjoy keeping it just always on my person. It's just easier to access. So that was the main reason I switched from Instacast 2 to 3, and also just, you know, new product, support developers, you know, let them give them a dollar or two. Well, I think it was a couple of dollars for Instacast 3, but yeah. It's a great application, and future proofed, because I know it'll keep going and they'll keep developing for it. So I enjoy it, and I don't really enjoy the built-in podcast app. It's all right. It's the full screen tile squares are pretty, and I enjoy that, but I wish I could definitely set Instacast 3 as my default, where if I'm opening a link, I would go there and subscribe to iTunes through there. But, you know, vis-a-vis, that's the way Apple has done it so far. So
yeah. And I've heard a rumor that Instacast is actually coming to the desktop. I think there's a Mac client demo coming shortly. I don't know the developer of that, but I know I've read somewhere the developer is working on that. And also they use an interesting model for software, where they actually have a membership model in addition to buying the software. And so members of Vimedia, I think that's how it's pronounced. You'll get a preview of the Mac version. If I'm thinking of the right guy, I think.
And they have a nice icon. It looks pretty on my home screen. So.
Yeah, I really like. I have nothing bad to say about Instacast 2, and that's why every time I go look at it, I think, oh, should I spend the $5 or whatever it is? And then I just get distracted probably by some other flashing object on the computer. So, all right, in wrapping up, I guess, I think I said that already, but in wrapping up officially again, where can folks find you, follow you, stalk you online?
The first place would just be drscifi.com. That's drscifi.com. Not doctor spelled out. That's like the who. this is more like the PhD. And then you can subscribe to me in iTunes. Those links are all on my site. I'm also on Twitter and app.net @ Dr. Sci-Fi. So just built around that brand. Came from a friend of mine who one day said, "Man, Darren, you're like the doctor. You just know so much about science fiction. You have like a doctorate in it." And I'm like, you know, I like the sound of that. I'm going to build an entire brand around that. Thank you. And hopefully that's just the main thing I want to come across, is I enjoy talking about this subject. I love sharing it with people. And for some reason, my brain holds all the facts, as there are as many as I can fit on all these wonderful shows. So, but yeah, so just if you type in the word Dr. Sci-Fi, you'll probably come across me.
All right. And the on the post of the page at sskTN.com for this interview, you sent me the photo you want me to use. That's your wife, I'm assuming, with you posing, doing this,
the Vulcan salute.
Vulcan salute, yeah. So that's full credit to you for getting your wife to pose in a Star
Trek
costume.
She made those costumes for us.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Major wife points there. And so we went as Halloween one year in our TOS costumes. I'm a little more of a TNG fan, but I think this looks good on both of us. So.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, Darren, for joining me here on Show Me Your Mic. And you can find all the things and links to stuff we've talked about at sskTN.com. Look for the Show Me Your Mic logo and episode 4. There's 3 episodes in behind this one that you may be interested in listening to as well if you like this. Tim Smith of the East Wing, and I'm going to Mike Rupert. No, Mike. It's getting late here. I'm mixing up my Mike Hurley of 70decibels.net. and also Dave Rupert. That's where I'm going with the Shop Talk show. Variety of folks from different types of things. That's different types of shows, web design and tech nerdery and all sorts of stuff. And so that's what's kind of fun about the show, I hope. Thank you for listening, and look for future episodes. We've got a whole bunch of guests lined up here in, where are we here, March, and going into April already. All sorts of different folks from different backgrounds, different levels of technical and hardware and software and all that kind of stuff. So thanks for listening. I'm Chris Enns, iChris on Twitter. ChrisEnns.com is my blog, and of course, SSKTN on Twitter, Facebook.com, all those things. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Show Me Your Mic on the SSKTN Podcast Network. Follow along on Twitter at SSKTN or like us on Facebook.com/SSKTN. Be sure to visit SSKTN.com for interviews with other podcasters, as well as learn about other shows we produce, such as Welcome to the Internet, Too Lazy to Blog, and Lost in Lemon.